Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are following and or subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We are coming to you live today on YouTube, Facebook, X, and probably some other, and LinkedIn, of course, where a lot of folks watch us. A different time zone today. I normally don't do these in the afternoon. I'm here in Seattle, so it's afternoon for me. But we are talking to someone, I'll get into it very soon, in a different time zone rather than the boring old US-Europe time zone. So without further ado, I'd say let's just get into it here. We're talking to someone from Kiwa Digital. Kiwa is a true pioneer in digital storytelling, media localization, and the preservation of indigenous languages. Whether it's through interactive learning tools, multilingual media, or cutting-edge voice technology, their mission is clear: to break barriers, connect cultures, and amplify voices that have too often gone unheard. And at the heart of this work is today's guest, Jordan Koziol-Repia, Senior Project Manager at Kiwa. Jordan's journey is a remarkable one, rooted in peaceful towns of Waioria, Nuhaka. Forgive me, I'm trying my best with the pronunciations here, Jordan. Of Waioria and Nuhaka, and shaped by a deep passion for media storytelling and Maori culture. Over nearly 15 years at Kiwa, Jordan has gone from audio engineer to product leader, driving global dubbing innovation with VoiceQ, the gold standard in localization software used by Netflix, Disney, Amazon, and more. His work blends audio engineering, project management, and cultural insights into powerful solutions that shape how stories are told around the world. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Kia ora. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Like I said, this is a different time zone for me. I'm not used to doing it in the afternoon. So, and you're over in New Zealand.
Correct. Yeah. Down here in Tamaki Makaurau in Auckland.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, welcome. Welcome. We'll see if we can get some people in this time zone joining us today. If not, of course, people are watching the recording. So, Jordan, I tried my best to write an intro here about what we want to talk about. What I want to talk about today is, of course, I want to talk about VoiceQ. I want to talk about multimedia localization and workflows because I'm a process guy. I'm an operations guy. I want to hear all about those workflows and all of that stuff, but I also really want to hear about what you're doing to help lift up voices from different cultures, underserved languages, and all of that stuff. So just kind of give you a sneak peek on the questions I'm going to be throwing your way today. But first, why don't you tell us a little bit about Kiwa, tell us a little bit about VoiceQ and your role in that.
I'll tell you what I'll do first. Because this is an Indigenous conversation we're having, what I'll do is I'll open it with an Indigenous prayer.
Love it.
So I open it here with Kia ora tātou katoa. Kia tau te rangamārie, kia tātou, e tū, tātou, ki te mahi. So this is a very short introduction to a meeting. It just means, hello everyone, may peace be with us, let us stand to work. So kia ora, hello, ko Jordan, Koziol-Repia, tōku ingoa, Kiwa Digital, aho e mahi ana. That translates to, my name is Jordan Koziol-Repia, and I'm a senior product manager at Kiwa Digital. So for the past 15 years, I've had the privilege of being part of Kiwa Digital here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. That's been from its inception as a, used to be a video production media house. And then around the time of the iPad, when that was first introduced around 2009, the entire company pivoted to educational content. It actually started with children's books. So we're actually adapting one of the first companies, I think, in the world to adapt children's storybooks into digital storytelling with animation and full live voicing and multilingual integration. So that was one of the first key points of that. From there, it evolved into what you're seeing here on screen, which is a whole bunch of CQ is what we call it, is cultural intelligence applications. So here in New Zealand, we have a very rich culture with Te Reo Māori, but we also support the Pacifica community, you know, the Pacific Islands, so that'd be Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, etc. So here in New Zealand, we have a lot of those different languages. So we support those in businesses, so allow them to basically translate their business culture into an application to essentially onboard, but also teach them the culture that they're coming into.
Huh.
So we have a lot of different apps in that space, everything from corporate, you know, we do have consumer apps as well. So a little more fun stuff, but yeah, have you ever looked at our Kiwi Digital app store? You'll notice there's a huge range of everything for Android and iOS, but myself, I've been part of what's called VoiceQ. So I've been helming that since about 2016. And we have a really strong relationship with a lot of our clients, especially in the dubbing space, you know, Netflix, Disney, other SVO providers. But we also support smaller indie and indigenous groups as well to help revitalize language. So that's a key point of difference on that. So most of the discussion today, I'm really happy to talk about, is around VoiceQ. Like you said, you're into systems, so those dubbing workflows, how AI is coming in to change all that, and how we're adapting with that, but also how our company's always been at the forefront of technology, but also very much keeping with what we call human in the loop. So yes, AI is coming in, yes, it's taking over dubbing, but we're not all about, hey, let's replace everyone with robots, let's keep this human interaction, let's keep that human storytelling. But hey, why don't we use these tools to basically take all the medial jobs and medial tasks that are traditionally done in dubbing and, you know, bring those down to a very low cost, so that way the creatives actually have more space to work in. So that's really what we're doing there. It's quite a range of things we do. I apologize. Yeah.
No. I was interrupting. And it's interesting to me because I was checking out what you guys do and all that stuff and researching it. And it's interesting to me the you do language services and you have technology solutions, right? And you're embracing AI and you're embracing the human in the loop and the human perspective of it. Right. And lastly, it's you have these scalable, big. How do I put this? Like you're working for Netflix, right? You're working for Disney, and I'm not breaking any NDAs there. It's on your website, and yet you're also working with smaller, you know, local, regional, equally important, sure, but these. Languages of lesser diffusion, I guess, is the term that people use. Underserved languages, underserved cultures, right? And to me, it seems like Kiwa's, it's largely, I mean, there's a lot of like contradictions in there. Not contradictions, but things that you don't see together every day, right? I've talked to a lot of people that have worked with Netflix, you know, a lot of companies that have worked with Netflix, and they're these big companies. They don't do a lot of work with underserved communities, right? Conversely, I've talked to a lot of companies that work with underserved communities. That's what they specialize in. They don't do a lot of work with Netflix, right? And you're kind of in this, in the middle of the Venn diagram with both. And I think that's kind of a unique position for you to be in.
It really is. And I think it's like you said, it's intrigued a lot of people about Kiwa and where it sits in that landscape. Because it is quite interesting, you know, you see a... obviously we travel up to the United States quite a bit, you know, we do all the shows and we go visit, you know, all these different offices and things like that, and I understand where you're coming from with the corporate side, and then it's quite funny we come
that's my
in
background.
It's like, hey, we built this. Well, it's like, hey, we built this tool that, you know, helps bring your costs down, so obviously the financial guys are happy, but it's also about how can we serve the creatives. And I don't think the VoiceQ application will be where it is today without us actually like hopping on calls in different time zones to actually listen to the creatives and see exactly how they want to use the tool. So by listening to the creators, we've built a tool for directors and adapters and audio engineers specifically. So we listen to all of those workflows. We're like, hey, what features work, what don't? And that helps with that. And then in terms of the management side, you know, the finance guys are really happy because obviously we're bringing your bottom line down, but the creativity goes up.
Right.
So we've had a lot of huge success with a lot of, you know, obviously Netflix television dubbing, which boomed, you know, in the, you know, just before 2020 all the way through. But, you know, like you said, in terms of Indigenous communities, you know, we helped the Cherokee Nation basically, you know, they wanted a way to dub, I think it was Amazon's Rings of Power into the Cherokee Nation language. So we're like, look, we helped with that. We helped, I think, the Wolf Willow Studios in Dakota to translate and dub, you know, the Avengers into the Lakota language. And yeah, we've helped other communities as well. Like you said, it's those are the ones we're actually quite passionate about.
Yeah.
There's a really good story. And like, even here in New Zealand, we do the te reo Māori versions of large Disney productions. And
yeah,
I see. Yeah, it doesn't seem like much, but to see those communities interact with that content in their own language, it means quite a bit to them. And it's very impactful. As opposed to just, you know, like a Korean drama into English, but even that's quite impactful as well. Cause sure. Again, that's reaching a whole new audience. So yeah, we're really happy to be part of that. But like I said, we're really about helping those creatives to deliver good dubbing. Yeah, we don't want you to deliver the old Kung Fu film style dubbing. It's all about how can we get that perfect lip sync. That's what they're all about. They're all striving for that perfect lip sync, but they still want voice actors in the studio to be able to, you know, do their job. So what Voice Q really is at the heart of it is we really call it karaoke for dubbing. But behind that, like you said, there's a workflow, you know, everything from translation, adaption, QC management to recording and mixing, all in the background of that karaoke screen for the actor.
Yeah. And you talk about localizing the like Disney movies, for example, and to me that's something that's super important, because like so many in this day and age, a lot of us have just become used to consuming content with subtitles. Like if I were to watch a Korean drama, I'd probably just watch it with subtitles because I don't want to watch the dubbing. But those Disney movies, and they're for kids. Right? Mm-hmm. Kids don't read so good yet, right? So it's super important, I think, for especially for the younger generation, that they have access to that dubbing in whatever language it might be. And you're doing it for these local languages. I do want to get into I want to take a look at the tool. I want to take a look at VoiceQ because I want to see hear a little bit more about this with the voice, with the lip syncing and the dubbing and all that stuff. But before we get into that, I just want to talk a little bit about this technology versus culturalization, right? Because I think there's this perception out there that, well, the machines can't help us. The machines aren't going to replicate culture. The machines aren't going to be able to help us with culture. Yeah, maybe we can machine translation some stuff, but we're always going to need humans. And you agree with that. You said it. So we're keeping that human in the loop. But I want to ask you about how is technology not just changing the way that we translate, not just changing the way that we dub and do lip syncing and all of that technical stuff, but how is technology actually helping us culturalize content?
It's really about those, I guess, the cultural entities actually taking part in the technology. So I think the unique part of New Zealand is the Māori businesses here are very integrated into technologies. So we have very great, you know, telco partners here. You know, we roll out internet to like remote, you know, places and like literally in the middle of the forest, they'll be on Marae with a group of people. And, you know, in New Zealand, we have this unique opportunity to roll out internet there. I know over in the United States, they're doing the same. And it's about how do we educate these communities to, you know, I guess, feel empowered to use technology to push their language. So, you know what, we are actually in that space where large language models are being created for Indigenous languages. I think the biggest discussion is about who has ownership over that.
Right.
Definitely the people that created have ownership over it. So
there's been some controversy, particularly out of New Zealand, if I remember correctly, reading some case studies about this, about there being a little bit of a kerfuffle, let's say, about a I think it was Microsoft coming in and creating a data set using a local language. Correct me if I'm wrong, or if I'm barking up completely the wrong tree. But the idea is that indigenous people should have ownership of that language. And the second a big company like Microsoft, for example, I'm just using them as an example, or Google, starts using that language data to create engines, large language models, whatever it is, this kind of gets into the philosophical debate. Are they stealing the language from the local people?
No, as long as they're involved in it, I think that it's fine. I mean, we have a good relationship with Microsoft, and but a lot of our technology is built on Amazon's AWS, and they actually worked with a whole lot of different Maori influences and people in the top in terms of language to actually write what's called a Maori data lens, which is all about data sovereignty and ownership rights for digital content in terms of that indigenous space. And I know in Australia and other places that they're definitely writing those briefs as well. I do know the one you're talking about. It's all about the usage. So obviously you're going to have times where it's misused. Here in New Zealand, we have good cases where, like, you know, alcohol brands or other brands would just use a Maori word because it sounds cool and not actually understand the meaning of it. I'm sure in different countries that happens all the time as well. There's, you know, someone just thinks, oh, this word's cool, but it could mean something terrible. Yeah. And they just don't understand it. But yeah, in terms of ownership of the language, yeah, it is, as long as the people are part of it, I think that's, you know, the indigenous groups need to be a part of that conversation, then it's fine. But again, I think that's where the data sovereignty comes in. It's like, okay, so whose language are you using? So here in New Zealand, you know, we have all these different tribes, and it's similar to, you know, other places around the world. So their dialect and their way of saying a word may be different, you know, up the road as opposed to where I'm sitting right now. So that's when you get into that large language model training. It's like, okay, so what tribe is training the large language model? So when I can go into Google and do Google Translate on hello, you know, it's similar to the speech I said at the start. I can type into Google that, it may give me a completely different translation than what Microsoft has, because obviously they're talking to someone different. So then that brings up that question of who's in the right. And right. At the end of the day, it's like, well, no one's in the wrong, but yeah, no one else is in the right either, because you need to respect there's different levels of language as well.
Well, let's go over to, I want to take a look at the tool here. VoiceQ. Supported by Kiwa, but its own standalone tool here, used by a bunch of different people out there. I'm going to bring up the website here on the NIMSY 100, which just recently came out. This is my own shameless plug for myself there. What is it? What does it do? Just give us a quick intro here. And I saw also, maybe it makes sense, I saw that you had a an intro video. Maybe we can just play that. No, I can't find it, of course, though. So, oh, here we go. Let's check this out.
Yeah, sure.
You might not be able to hear it, but they can hear it. VoiceQ 8.0.
Yeah, so that's our latest release.
macOS application design is a complete pre-recording and recording tool. I'm trying to narrate here. It supports over 900 languages, and you can import over 15 script file types. Oh, you're going too fast for me. All right, I didn't realize this was not voiced over. Which, come on, with a tool like VoiceQ, your promotional material should be voiced over. Come on, there's a missed opportunity there. Well, why don't you just tell us about it?
All right. No. So, it's been a tool that's been around since the early 2003. So well before my time. But we decided to resurrect it in 2016 after, you know, I think one of the senior managers were like, hey, what's this voice queue tool that people are still using? So yeah, people were still using the tool like after all those years.
Huh.
So we reached out to a whole lot of the, you know, a bunch of the studios are still using it. And they're like, yeah, we use voice queue on the daily to do dubbing. They were like, okay, this is interesting to see. So we had a few conversations there, and then we released voice queue 2.0. Back in 2016, and we went up to NAB in Las Vegas. It was one of the first times we went there, and introduced VoiceQ Writer, which was our translation tool. So prior to that, there had always been a high quality dubbing tool used in studios, right? So we needed to break into the translation and adaption market. So we brought in a low cost version of the application that integrates straight into the studio one. So that way an adapter could download this and create a whole script and basically send it to a studio, and an actor can just come walk right in and just record.
Hmm.
And in terms of recording, we integrated very specifically with Pro Tools. So about, let's just say 90% of our studios all use Pro Tools every day. So we integrated very heavily with Avid Satellite, and also with traditionally with MIDI. So we locked in really tight with that. So we have a really tight sync between both. So if I press play in Pro Tools, press play in VoiceQ, everything's locked in and synced. And then the way it works is that the video output comes from VoiceQ. There's a karaoke overlay that basically goes across the screen that the adapter actually needs to sort out themselves. So they do the assignment and the alignment for the translated script that comes in, and then they do what's called a trans adaption, where you basically translate, but let's say I'm speaking to you directly on a screen, my lips are moving like this. Basically what their job is to adapt it for the local territory to make sure that the lip sync matches what's being said. So that's really where that grew from. And then the next part of the workflow obviously is the recording, so recording the actor and then mixing that down. And then on top of that, we have what's called our VoiceQ cloud system. So we've got the Mac OS app, which is our flagship application, but also the cloud system communicates all that together, which you're seeing here on screen. Mm-hmm. And the back there, that gives your project management people like an oversight and overview of like where things are at. So, you know, one of the biggest challenges is like, hey man, we've got 20 episodes that Netflix want recorded by next week. Help. So yeah. Here is to figure out, you know, how do we cast everybody? How do we manage all the lines? How do we book it? You know, how is it priced?
Yeah.
You know, so everything fairly priced and set up. So we help with all of that. So, you know, it was really awesome to create what's called the VoiceQ Cloud grouping. So what it is, I can take a series of television scripts. So let's just say 12 episodes of a TV show. I know, hey, Tucker, you got to come in. You've got, let me just press a button, you've got, you know, 600 lines you need to record. Mm-hmm. And all of them have a varying degree of duration, but we could do a duration check. So it's like, okay, you got 600 lines and that duration totals about 30 minutes. So if you're coming in to record 30 minutes of dialogue, we've got that, you know, and then you as an actor have that power to be like, okay, cool, I'm going to charge you x amount depending on where you are. So it empowered the actors, it empowered the studios as well, because now they're not just shooting in the dark. Because
mm-hmm.
prior to that, you got paper scripts, so you're just using Excel sheets. You kind of got to, you bring an actor in and, you know, your 1 hour session ends up being 3 hours. So now you're paying them 2 hours extra.
Well, and so I remember like, working on these, you know, back when I used to have a real job and I didn't just talk into a microphone. Like, I remember working on projects where we would pay for the voice actor to come in. And we'd also pay for what we called like a voice coach to come in. Yep. And that person was there to kind of help them with the timing, help them with the pronunciation and stuff. Because there's nothing worse than having a studio session and then a week later getting feedback from the client that you mispronounced something or something like that. And you got to do it all over again, right? And it sounds to me like technology's kind of alleviated that need for having a voice coach necessarily in the studio. Or is this Is this all happening like in studios, or are people using home studios to record this? Because I know that was a big thing, that a trend that's happened in the last 5-10 years is we're starting to see more and more voice actors use home studios.
Yeah, so remote dubbing is 100% possible with VoiceQ. We promoted it pretty heavily around the 2020 time.
Right.
So through 2020 to about 2021, you know, we promoted remote recording using our systems. You could do that on cloud or on native and then send that through to studios to do mixdown. So because a lot of our clientele are big studios, we really get it to say, hey, look, you just do your recording and then push a button and send it to the studio and they'll mix it. They'll process it. They'll chop it. They'll do the fades. So we took a lot of that off of the actors based on feedback, and it worked out really well because obviously, you know, they're still producing content over those 2-3 years. Remote recording's still a big part of some actors' businesses. I actually think it's quite cool how you could be anywhere in the world. Someone sends you content, you record it, and then send it back. One of the cool things with VoiceQ Cloud, which we've recently done, is, you know, we added DRM for those people to make sure that, you know, content is safe. So, you know, I can share with you a project, like a full live project, for a limited time that has all the protections on it. So, you know, you can't screen record and et cetera. And you can do your recording, send it back to me, and then I'll just pull the project off you straight away.
So,
so it's about how do we do it?
Yeah, sorry for the listeners on there. DRM, digital rights management. Why is that important? Why is that something that people are worried about?
They're worried about it mainly because of leaks. Obviously, you know, you have content that's, you know, doing cinema or doing streaming.
So it's like the studios that's worried about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so mainly comes from the top end. So top ends make sure they protect their content to make sure that it, you know, it's streamed correctly. And safely. So we alleviate a lot of that stress by, you know, letting them use their own S3 buckets, you know, in terms of AWS for S3, that's like their own little hard drive they can use in the cloud, where they have full control over the content. That's really helped a lot of the big studios and smaller studios to, you know, use cloud and remote recording. Because I'm a real advocate for remote work in general. I think it's great. I think it's just really helped out. And, you know, it allows people in smaller communities even to, you know, become part of a larger group.
Right. You don't have to live in the big city anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can have your home studio and, you know, raise your family in your hometown. And there's a lot of advantages to a lot of stuff being remote these days, I would say.
100%.
Now, we've been talking a lot about voice actors, like, and I don't know if you've got into the whole synthetic voice thing yet, but I want to ask your opinion about synthetic voices. My opinion, they're quite good, right? They're getting quite good. Now, I'm not saying they're like good enough for the latest episode of The Mandalorian, right? But if for general purpose things, the synthetic voices have really come a long ways. So I kind of wanted to get your 2 cents on how do you view synthetic voice, where do you think it's going? Where do you think we'll be 5-10 years from now with synthetic voices? Will it ever get to that point where Disney can dub their movies or streaming content with synthetic voices instead of voice actors? Yeah. This is my open-ended question.
Yeah, I mean, who's saying they're not already? We just don't know it. that's really where technology's at nowadays. Kiwa's stance on AI is that, yeah, we want to use it as a tool to empower our users. Right. That's the real key stance. So we do have synthetic voices through XLate and Veritone inside of our system. Basically, you can tap into those voice data banks and create content through that.
Have you developed the synthetic voices, or are you tapping into like Amazon Polly or using somebody else's?
Yeah, so we can tap into different things that we want. So we're not personally not creating our own voices, things like that.
Okay.
Because obviously there's a lot of great third-party services that already provide that, and they've invested very heavily inside of that. that's not something that we really want to focus on in our business.
It's a big barrier to entry. It's a lot of investment. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, obviously there's been a lot of legal stress around it as well. It's like, you know, what's right, what's wrong, things like that.
That's kind of why I'm asking you, because I wanted to make sure if you were doing it or not, because now my follow-up question, now that I know you're not actually building those yourself, is is there a lot of concern that you hear from the voice actors, for example, about their voices being used to train engines? Because that's something that I've been hearing a lot, like from voice actors, is that, well, the more that I record, then these big companies are just going to use my voice to train an engine, and that's eventually going to replace me. What have you been hearing around that?
I mean, I know a lot of the strike was about that, and then I think it was more about, you know, these actors going to the agents and, you know, reconfiguring their contracts to make sure that that's all covered. Because it was a bit, you know, there's a bit of a gray area prior to that strike. I think they got quite a, you know, a good turnout from that. Basically, you know, a lot of these large companies have said, no, we're not going to replace humans in terms of dubbing for content, which is great. There is a lot of stress around it. I know a lot of actors are worried, but again, I think it's about who you work for and what contracts you sign. Because at the end of the day, you know, you have a right over your own voice, and we stand by that.
There was a time when that statement wasn't taken for granted, though, right? When you say you have a right over your own voice. Like, yeah, now we do. It took some strikes and took some negotiation as a society to figure that out. And I it's still not 100% clear, I think, to everybody out there. But I'm glad that that's the way the pendulum has swung, and hopefully it's going to stay on that side, where you do have a right to your own voice and your own likeness.
Oh, 100%. And you know, like I said, there are a lot of cool third-party technologies out there that, yeah, they allow you to clone your voice pretty quick, and, you know, you can make content and all that. But, yeah, always read the fine print. That's what I always say when you use any of this technology. If it says that it's going to store your voice, maybe don't use that system. We actually partnered with Veritone and with XLA because they have really good rights around voice ownership. Okay. So you can create your own custom models. You own that custom model. And, you know, it's not shared with anybody else. So I could record my own voice in the Veritone. I have my premium voice and I can use that for my content, but no one else can use it unless I decide to license it out to somebody. So that's why we chose those companies. In terms of its use case, in terms of VoiceQ, there's actually two use cases we use at the moment for synthetic voice. One is for audio description. It's really helped in the audio description market, because obviously audio description is just, you know, you just saying, hey, look, guy jumps on screen,
right?
You know, bell toll, thing like that. It's very generic stuff. So replacing voice actors on that, it's not a big deal. And you know, there's not a lot of emotion inside of that either. So those flat voices work perfect for that. Same goes for, replacing voices on, real generic content, so training manuals, things like that. That's all been done inside of VoiceQ. They can use that. But when it comes to dubbing, we're actually using the flat voice as a way to track lip sync.
Yep.
So let's just say I've got a Korean language script that's been sent to me, and I want to translate it to English and adapt it. So the adapter can go through, change it, translate it. They can use machine translation or can use, you know, manual translation, completely up to them. Once they translated it, they can actually generate a voice for it and then use that flat voice to basically create that lip sync that I was telling you across the band. And then when an actor comes in, they can use that as a follow guide to record.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a rough scratch track so that you're getting timing right and everything. That makes a lot of sense, because why not? Yeah. You're not paying someone to do it, right? And that, to me, is what I see with generative AI, whether we're talking about synthetic voices, whether we're talking about generated content, is that a lot of the use cases aren't necessarily things that are replacing work done by humans previously. It's stuff that just didn't make sense to pay a human to do before, right? But now it's like, yeah, why don't we just use this? That makes a lot of sense to me. I did want to drill down into this about the, because I don't come from a multimedia background. Yeah, sure, I've worked on some multimedia projects before, right? But it's kind of like its own unique space over there, especially when you're talking about multimedia, like entertainment multimedia. And so it's kind of a blind spot for me, and I can't recall that I've ever actually worked on a project that requires lip syncing before. So I want to ask you a little bit about that. But first of all, for the audience, and for me too, can you kind of walk us through like the different, you know, what's the difference between, because there's all these terms that I think lay people, we use interchangeably, whether it's, you know, the difference between subtitles and closed captions, for example, the difference between what is dubbing versus voiceover versus all of these different things. Can you kind of give us a brief intro course to voiceover dubbing 101 here?
Yes, yeah, so voiceover is more traditionally narration, so narrating tracks. I mean, you could say in terms of, you know, narrating over a podcast or something like that, that'd be voiceover, or voiceover on a video. What dubbing is it's about getting that original content and using that original mouth movement, like I've discussed before, and making sure that the translated language, so let's just say we're going from English to Spanish, you want to have the Spanish words still lip sync up to how I'm speaking the words now. So that's the huge difference between dubbing and voiceover. So voiceover is very loose in terms of its sync, as opposed to dubbing, which has to adhere to a whole lot of rules. So I think you talked about earlier about having a voice coach in the studio. We actually promote having a director in the studio. So the director is a voice cue master who knows the system and can adjust the sync and edit the script on the fly. So a lot of studios in LA actually do this. They actually have a director whose specific job is to guide an actor to say the right word. And if the word doesn't fit the mouth movement, they actually adapt it and switch the word out for something else. It's basically like going through a thesaurus, finding a word that fits that actually works with like an MB or P, or how, you know, how I'd say like a pop or something like that. That's the director's job to sync that up for the actor. So that even the great thing about that is with VoiceCue, because it's all live editing the script, once you're done, you can export that out. And that's the as recorded subtitles that are, you know, put onto the platform. So you actually have a dub synced script as opposed to just a subtitle one. So again, that goes against what you're talking about with subtitles and closed captions, is with VoiceCue, you can create what's called an as recorded script, which is completely different to a subtitle. So a subtitle, you know, that would traditionally be a complete, you know, transliteration of what's said in the original language. So if you're watching something like, let's just say anime or things like that, that's a straight transliteration. But a dub potentially would just, it would be, I guess, unique to, let's just say it's done for the US, right? Uh-huh. So have you wording that in terminology that's specific to the US, as opposed to if it's dubbed in Australia, they'll have completely different terminology for, you know, slang and things like that. So that's kind of where the dubbing comes in. It's like, it's like I said before, it's trans adapted for the territory that it's being localized for.
Huh. I think you just answered a question that I've had for years, which is why when I watch Netflix and I'm watching a Spanish show, I can turn on the subtitles and I can also turn on the English dubbing, and the subtitles don't match the dubbing. And yep, it's because there's actually two different scripts. One's adapted for the dubbing to make it more, to fit more the dubbing, and one's just a straight translation of the actual script.
Yep. So most content nowadays will have an as recorded script, so that matches the English dub. And then there's the original translation, which is more closer to what the original content was about. So the original content subtitle was usually done by actually from a different studio or a different business will actually do the subtitle as opposed to the dub.
Interesting, very interesting. And yes, so this is super interesting for me to understand, like I said, because it's largely been a blind spot for me on how they actually get the lip syncing to work. They're actually changing the script so that it more closely fits the lip movements of the actors. And yeah, I was always curious, like, do they actually somehow like change the lips. Is that even a thing? Like using like CGI or anything, or especially like with animated shows or with video games or something? Is that even a thing that happens where they'll actually like go and edit the lips?
Yeah. So especially in video games, video games are a bit unique. So
yeah, that's why I bring it up. We've
got companies that do cutscene recordings. So a lot of them are just straight dubs for those cutscene recordings, because a lot of them are baked into the system. Maybe they're not in-engine films, but a lot of the in-engine stuff that's recorded using voice cue or, you know, just in general, the great thing about a lot of the game engines nowadays is, you know, you can just put the waveform in and it just, the mouth will match that perfectly.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, if you got static CGI trailers, let's just say like a trailer for a new game that's coming out, most of the time that's not going to be, you know, it takes hours to render one scene. So they're not exactly going to render it for each individual, you know, translation they do. So that's where the dub would still come into play on that. So you'd still try to match the lip and adapt it. But yeah, in terms of general content, yeah, I know there's a few AI third parties out there that are looking into it. There's some really cool stuff where basically I can speak and then it, you know, replaces the mouth. It's getting better every day, obviously, wow, as the technology evolves. That may be a thing. I've seen some early development on that. I think it was like LipDub AI was one. And we've been in discussions of a whole lot of these different players, but yeah, it's not saying that's completely mainstream yet, but like you said, in 5-10 years, it could be the norm.
It's moving so fast. Yeah. Everything's moving so fast, right?
And it's generational as well. Like, I think because the kids nowadays are growing up on absorbing so much content, it's almost like, look, I'm just going to talk about my age now. Our generation's more about the quality and can actually see that difference because we know quality from, you know, the films and television that we've all watched. But the children nowadays, they absorb so much content at such a fast pace that it's almost like they don't care. It's like, so I believe the audience in like 10, 15 years is going to be completely different to the audience now. And you're probably going to be able to get away with a lot of this AI integration because content is being consumed so quickly, it's almost like they don't really mind it.
Yeah.
Because they grow up on it, right?
This is what I say darn near every episode that I do here. And I feel sorry for people that watch, like, the followers that listen to all of these podcasts, because I just repeat myself over and over again. But, like, when it comes to the technology, like, I usually say this within the context of machine translation, but we can also use it within the context of synthetic voice, for example, or text-to-speech, or whatever you want, right? Is like, two things are happening. One, the technology is getting better. The quality is getting better. Right. But two, which is what you just touched on, is that societal expectations are coming down because we're more desensitized to it. And you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Like my generation growing up, we grew up with professional everything and we can really tell if something is a synthetic voice. Right. But I watch my kids on their iPad, you know, watching the YouTubes and stuff. And, you know, and the synthetic voice on social media is just used so much to the point that I don't think my kids or your kids are going to notice it when they're our age. It's just going to be completely different. And secondly, they're native to artificial intelligence. They're going to be just in the way that I always grew up with the internet and the computer. Yep. It was a slow internet and a slow computer, but I always had the internet and a computer, right? My parents didn't have that. So I was a native to that. They called me for tech support when their computer's not working, right? And it's like, holy crap, what am I going to be calling my kids for tech support for in 20 years? Right. And it scares me. Yeah. It scares me because, like, oh my gosh, I'm already losing touch. You know, this weekend I'm going to go down and teach a course. I do guest lecturing and workshops and stuff at universities. And I look at these university students and I'm just like, you guys are in a completely different age right now. Like when I was in college, I remember I'd go to the library to check out a book, to read the book and take notes in a paper while sitting in the library. And nowadays, these kids have generative AI, and it's like, I don't know who to feel sorry for, the kids or the professors, right? Because how do you grade papers when generative AI is the thing, and people are just using that to write their essays? And they should be using it to write their essays, right? I don't think I have my kids using ChatGPT, supervised, mind you, but I've been encouraging my kids to use ChatGPT because why wouldn't I? That's the technology of the future, and I think forbidding it is not setting them up for success. So anyways, tying it back in to our industry, like you mentioned, you revived VoiceQ when it was created VoiceQ 2.0. I think we're at, what, 8.0 now?
Yeah.
For
yeah,
VoiceQ? So all right. So
we're pushing pretty hard. I think we've done about 1,000 new features since we did that iteration. So we've just really been pushing hard.
Well, congratulations. I mean, I think your guys' reputation speaks for itself with all the companies that you're working for. It's largely an industry standard, it sounds like. I think a great kind of to start wrapping this up is, what's in 9.0? What's on the roadmap? Like, what are the things that you've identified for the future that this is where this industry is going, and therefore this is where VoiceQ is going?
Yeah, so we have a unique take on AI, and that's really what we're pushing with the next version of VoiceQ. So one is, how do we close the gap on transcription? So if I've got no script and I've got media, you know, transcription's so good nowadays.
Oh yeah.
You can just drop a content in and just push a button, it transcribes it. We're doing that on device now. So for even higher security, you can just put it on an Apple device, push a button, it transcribes the whole film. And then from there, that's where you can create your translation script. So again, we're looking to save, you know, 80 to 90% of time just setting up the project, which is good. The next part of that is what we call, we're using Vision AI to create video analysis. So that's going through and finding where a character appears on screen, where they leave screen. It's doing scene analysis, finding where a scene starts, you know, camera shot changes, things like that. That's all being automated now. And the next stage on that is lip detection. So actually seeing, you know, how an actor's lip is portrayed on screen, and then creating a marker on our timeline to show that. So when an actor goes in, they know, okay, so I need to have my mouth a little bit like this, or like this, or maybe it's a closed mouth, in order to portray that better. So it's, again, that's trying to help the actors portray better, as opposed to, you know, using synthetic voice. And then the final part of that is being able to export it quickly. So with our cloud system that we built out, that's all part of the ecosystem. So I'm able to, you know, synchronize a project from here in New Zealand with someone in LA, someone in Miami, all at one time. So that's really what we're looking at, is full globalization on a project. So I'm able to send a project to you in real time. You edit it, I see what you've changed, and I can record that straight in the studio without any downtime. And like the goal of that is, you know, you can have directors working remotely, sync into the studio, actors there as well. We can all just communicate on video chat and record in different spots. But having that content secure is, you know, one of the biggest concerns that a lot of the partners have. So sure. We've been really focused on increasing that security, so getting those security ticks from everybody.
Oh, very cool. I mean, it's like I said, the technology is advancing so quickly. It's hard to keep up. It's really hard to keep up, right? And in the meantime, you have, the technology is advancing, but in the meantime, you still have like those boring old requirements, like the security requirements, which are just becoming more complex, more nuanced, I should say. And some companies are kind of fighting just because they're a little bit more risk adverse, I'd say. But generally, the conversations that I'm having with clients, enterprises, is, whereas a year ago I talked to people on the client side and they'd say things like, well, we're not using ChatGPT because our CEO has forbid any use of generative AI from anybody. We're not allowed. It's blocked from our systems, right? I'm not hearing that as much anymore. I'm hearing more about like how are we going to be leveraging this technology and mandate from the top. Like, I don't care how, but you better be using generative AI for these things. So times are a changing.
As long as you use it well, Tucker, I think it's fine. Like,
yeah,
use it correctly. Don't just use it because you've been mandated to use it.
Well,
that's really our stuff.
That's the conversation I'm having nowadays, right? Whereas a year ago, it was, like I said, people were saying, oh, we're not allowed to use it. And the conversation I would be having with people is like, no, you should be encouraged. Like, don't change your whole process. But now's the time to be testing, prototyping, playing around with it, figuring it out, right? So I was encouraging people to use it. Now the conversation that I'm having more often is, okay, you want to use AI. Why? Right? And I'm not saying you shouldn't use AI, but start with the why. And don't use it. Don't use generative AI just to use generative AI. There's got to be, start with the use case and then figure out how AI can help you rather than saying, I'm going to use AI and then trying to mash a system together based upon.
Exactly. That's our stance. You use it as a tool to enhance your own work.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I use it every day. You know, I use it. I said it before. I'll say it again. I use it to write the scripts. Your introduction, you know, everything, you know, Kiwa Digital is blah, 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 blah. It's like, hey, AI, here's a LinkedIn page. Please write me an introduction for Jordan. And it writes me like 9 paragraphs. And I'm just like, yeah, okay, we'll just take the first one for Jordan. Hope he's not too offended. But before we get any further, I just got to say I've done a really bad job of getting to chat today. But Gio, I see you over there in the chat. As usual, if you don't know Giovanna, Giovanna's great. Gio, I need to just start inviting you to co-host these things. If you ever see something on the schedule for an NIMSY Live, Gio, that you want to co-host, just reach out to me. We'll give you a block here on screen. But yeah, it's good to see you in the chat, Gio. Sorry, I didn't do a great job of responding in real time. Jordan, I think we're getting to the end here. Tell us, where can we find you? Who should reach out to you? People that want to know more about Kiwa, people that want to know more about VoiceQ, where can they find you? How can they reach you? Give us all of that good information here.
Yeah, so we do a lot of bespoke custom development. So yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, definitely go through kiwa.com. There's a really good portal on there for contacting the team for that. But if you're specifically looking for a dubbing or enterprise solution, please feel free to contact me directly if you want to, or go through voiceq.com. There's, you know, we do full like 10-day trials on VoiceQ, so you can easily just load up and go. And yeah, you know, it's not like a trial where you just go in and press a button and you're left to yourself. You can actually talk to us. We like talking to new clients about what their use case is, where their pain points are, and then figuring out solutions for that. So we're really open to doing all that. So yeah, if you're in the localization industry and you are interested in remote recording, or you just want to enhance your dubbing workflows, please feel free to reach out.
Very nice. Thank you. And I just brought it up on screen here, but if you're watching/listening to this, I encourage you to go follow Jordan on LinkedIn so you can be up to date with all of his stuff that's going on. KiwaDigital.com is an address for Kiwa, and VoiceQ.com if you want to know more about the tool itself right there. And with that, I will take us out. Stick around, Jordan, and we'll chat right afterwards. But in the meantime, ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of NIMSY Live. If you had a good experience, you can join us next time on tomorrow. Tomorrow, we are having a double feature. I'm having two different NIMSY Live episodes. Why? Because I've been on vacation for 2 weeks. So now I've got to pay the piper. We're talking to Marina Pancheva from NIMSY Insights. We're talking about generative AI readiness and localization. We're also talking about game localization with Michael Sutu. So both are going to be really interesting episodes. Some things that I enjoy talking to experts on, because I don't pretend to be an expert on either of those things myself. So if you're not already signed up, make sure to go over to the NIMSY's LinkedIn page and sign up for those events so you can be notified of the upcoming session. Once again, finally, my name is Tucker Johnson, host of NIMSY Live, and it has been my pleasure to join you today. I appreciate our guest, Jordan. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights. doing all the hard work so I can have these fun conversations. And I appreciate everybody in our industry who's responding to surveys, booking briefings with NIMSY researchers, so that we can share all of your experience with the entire industry and we can all learn together. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.